Now here's something different. Should Joe Biden do a whistle-stop train campaign tour of America? Would that help? Is that different enough? I'm Bert Cohen, and with your help, we are keeping democracy alive. Stay tuned.
He's not breathing.
Can you get a pulse?
Barely.
Though probably no one listening now was around in 1948, or at least not able to pay much attention to it, we've all seen the moment when a broadly smiling, newly elected President Harry Truman held above his head a newspaper with that infamous headline, "Dewey Beats Truman." Truman, you recall, only became president by the accident of the death of President Roosevelt in 1945, and Truman happened to be vice president. After that, no one thought Truman could actually win an election on his own. Truman's approval rating was not good. Then he surprised everyone and did indeed win. Well, that was 76 years ago. Today, much of conventional wisdom is that as his numbers are not all that good, Biden can't win against the movement known as Trumpism. Well, we all know about conventional wisdom. And today, yes, things have changed a lot, and winning is largely about catching millions of eyes on the exceptionally crowded multimedia, catching eyes again and again and again. Trump is extremely good at that. Meanwhile, the centralized few people that make up the leadership of the National Democratic National Committee seem to be asleep at the switch. Biden's message is just not getting out. He's been swamped by the amazingly pervasive focus on the former guy. Well, our guest today, Edward Siegel, has a both novel and very old idea for changing that dynamic. He, along with many others, are drawing comparisons between the two, Truman and Biden. Though at first, what he has in mind may sound, well, perhaps crazy. Whatever method the Biden campaign is doing so far just lacks oomph. And those of us who treasure America as a republic operating through democracy are plenty worried. The other guy has made no secret of his intent to act as a dictator from day one. The Biden camp just can't keep going on the "I'm not Trump" line alone. He has to connect. And the people he has to connect with are the very same people that our 2016 nominee, Hillary Clinton, apparently looked down on. She literally flew over those crucial states and, what a surprise, lost them. Once was quite bad enough. Well, our guest on Keeping Democracy Alive today, Edward Siegel, suggests in his new essay that Biden tries something really different and quite old at the same time. Quote, embracing the political theater and practical benefits of using a train to get in front of the American people could give Biden the edge he's needing, especially in swing states, end of quote. And as we all really should know by now, yes, politics is indeed theater. Siegel's not-so-radical, certainly different idea is the title of his new book on the topic, Whistle Stop Politics, Campaign Trains and the Reporters Who Covered Them. He argues, and I agree, quote, Biden will need to consider out-of-the-box political strategies to connect with voters and could also benefit from a whistle-stop tour the way Truman did. Trains? Aren't they really old? And doesn't that contain the obvious risk of reinforcing the widely perceived negative that Biden is himself old? Well, we'll look at that and other questions as we speak with Edward Siegel. Now, thank you so much for being with us.
I'm great to be with you today, Bert.
Edward Siegel has more than 30 years' experience as a crisis management expert. He's managed crisis situations as a CEO of two trade associations, advised and helped organizations survive disasters, scandals, and emergencies, including the arrest and firing of corporate officers, and conducted crisis management and communication training for hundreds of executives and their staffs. Siegel is the former marketing strategies columnist for The Wall Street Journal's StartupJournal.com and senior media relations consultant for Ogilvy Public Relations Worldwide. He's provided expert public relations advice and counsel to more than 500 corporations and organizations. And the foreword to his book, I note, is by the famed journalist Jules Whitcover, veteran Washington correspondent, whose car I actually got to drive across Iowa in 1984, as he was in a little airplane with then-candidate George McGovern. A former political columnist for the Baltimore Sun, that's Jules Witkover, and author of 85 Days, The Last Campaign of Robert Kennedy. We're talking about the good Robert Kennedy, of course. Could it be that a whistle-stop tour might provide the missing political drama, intrigue, humor, and possible triumph for Joe Biden? Could a whistle-stop tour across the middle of America, which has felt left behind and went with Trump, be the needed, eye-catching, and novel difference Biden now seems to be lacking? Well, again, thanks for being with us today. Please tell us the genesis of how you decided to write this book.
Well, I had the good fortune to actually organize and plan an old-fashioned campaign train tour for a member of Congress running for re-election in Oklahoma, and he was looking for a way to generate energy and enthusiasm about his campaign. And I did some research. It turned out we had a set of workable but unused Amtrak tracks in Oklahoma. And I pitched that idea to the congressman and his campaign staff, and they loved the idea. We wound up renting a train from Santa Fe Railroad, generated a lot of press coverage. And in putting together that train trip, I did research about the history of campaign trains, and I found very little in terms of books or research, and that led me to collect stories and eventually to write this book.
Oh, interesting. Yes, I hadn't, the idea of having that as a subject matter hadn't occurred to me, but there's some interesting stories that I'm looking forward to hearing from you. What were the prospects for the Truman campaign before the Whistle Stop Tour, and what were the observable effects of the Whistle Stop Tour?
Well, he was definitely behind the eight ball. No one gave him any chance of winning against Republican Thomas Dewey. In fact, pollsters were so confident that Dewey would win that they stopped doing polls of the public 2 months before the election. Reporters didn't give Truman any chance at all. And one of the reasons that Truman wanted a campaign by train was to connect directly with people. The good news is that people started to turn out. The more he spoke, the better he got. And he did not one, but several trips across the country by train. And I really think, and he acknowledged afterwards, that that was a tipping point in his successful race, his underdog race, to capture the White House.
Fantastic. And certainly the Electoral College was still as powerful and extremely important back then as it is now. And a lot of those states that make up so many votes in the Electoral College are in the Midwest, states that Biden did not, Hillary Clinton certainly didn't carry. What were the political realities in 1948? What, if any, similarities were there between Truman's approval rating and those of Joe Biden?
Well, I think there were a lot of similarities. Truman was not seen as much of a leader, neither is Biden. People were concerned about Truman's ability to lead the country and to get his message across and to get his legislation enacted. Biden's running into the same problem. Biden has some problems, though, that Truman did not have: his age. Truman was older, but certainly not as old as Biden. And Biden continues to show in opinion polls that a lot of people doubt his ability to lead. But I think that campaigning by train would make Biden more of a real flesh and blood person, generate energy and enthusiasm that other ways of campaigning simply can't do. And it worked for Truman in 48, and I think it would work for Biden in 2024.
Interesting. I, having been around a lot of campaigns myself, I know that when people saw Hillary Clinton one-on-one in person as real flesh and blood, she did well. But on TV, it didn't project that well. And I think that's a very interesting to be aware of, that coming out to the middle of America by train, you know, would put him right before the real people. And before we go too far, you said that you worked fairly recently with a candidate who you convinced him or her to do a train whistle stop thing, and it worked. Tell us more about that.
Well, I didn't work with the candidate, but I reported about the candidate, Peter Welch, running for Senate in the 2022. He ran for Congress in 2006 by train and won, and he used that same tactic very successfully in 2022 when he ran for Senate in Vermont.
Yes.
Earlier in 2020, Joe Biden campaigned by train in Ohio and Pennsylvania. He generated a lot of press coverage, and it worked for him. Even earlier, Barack Obama campaigned by train in Pennsylvania in 2008, and he and Biden did a campaign train tour on the way to Biden's inauguration in 2009. Generated a lot of favorable press coverage. Thousands of people would turn out across the route of the train. So whether Republican or Democrats in 48 or today, it can be a great, successful campaign tactic.
Yeah, seeing the person in the flesh is quite different. It's quite different. Now, we in New Hampshire, which is to the right of Vermont, as you know, we get to see candidates in the flesh quite a bit. And that's a unique vantage point that we have here, that we can, you know, test the mettle of the candidate by seeing him or her right there in person. And flying over, doing it by TV, ain't quite the same. And you have many years of experience as a crisis management expert. I mean, really, much more so than anybody I've spoken to so far. From your unique and valuable vantage point, would you say Biden is an actual crisis, by the definition of crisis?
Yeah. No doubt about it. He's having a crisis on a couple of different levels. He's facing a crisis of confidence in his ability to lead. He's facing a crisis in people's belief in him that he can beat Trump. And, of course, he's facing a crisis about his concerns to overcome issues related to his age. I think he's doing a little bit better job using humor lately to diffuse the issues about his age. But I think if he goes on the campaign train trail and people see him in action, he could put a lot of those fears and concerns to rest very quickly.
Yeah, again, being a Democrat in New Hampshire, I got to see Biden a number of times each time he ran for president. And I was always impressed with him. What can I say? He has been. Now, the same old gets pretty tiresome for hardworking campaign reporters, and they do work hard, as you well know. Theater makes things more interesting and fun, whereas pleasing reporters goes a long way toward enabling any successful campaign. I mean, you got to make the reporters happy and interested. You know, it's this sort of a tough line to cross there, but famed journalist Bob Woodward of Watergate fame said of your book and this idea of a whistle-stop tour that the prospect has drama, proximity, and uncertainty, factors especially pleasing to reporters. Please say more about that and why. What about working with reporters and understanding the what reporters have to go through, why that's important if the goal is winning?
Well, reporters, of course, are storytellers. And if politicians can provide exciting stories to the media, then I think they're more likely to get favorable coverage by the reporters. But, of course, in addition to telling the stories, reporters want to show the stories to their audiences. And a campaign train tour would certainly provide exciting visuals, a great background, and showing and telling stories about Biden. And, of course, showing and telling those great stories, I think, would be a powerful 1-2 punch for Biden that could be the tipping point in this year's election.
All right. What about the obvious concern that trains are sort of old-fashioned, except for high-speed trains? And I remember Barack Obama promised to have a significant investment in high-speed trains that would be, you know, create a lot of jobs and do a lot to deal with climate change. But what about that concern that trains are old, Biden is old, that it could reinforce that? Your thoughts?
Well, I don't think that would hold true for Biden. It didn't hurt him in 2020 when he campaigned by train. And although campaigning by train was an old way of campaigning, mm-hmm. it does kindle nostalgia and a great visual. Barack Obama used it to great effect when he ran for president in 2008. So I think it's less a concern that it triggers connections with age. I think it's a matter of triggering excitement, energy, and enthusiasm. And there's no doubt about it. People love trains.
Yes.
Collecting train memorabilia, riding trains, building trains. There's just a lot of nostalgia and a lot of great memories associated with it. So I think if Biden campaigned by train this year, it wouldn't hurt. It would really help him.
And there's something, I don't know, somehow reassuring about trains. I don't know what it is. It's like, I mean, that's why people build, model trains. It's something just, I don't know, it's reassuring somehow. I can't quite figure it out. Maybe you can.
Having done various campaign events for lots of different politicians over the years, the train tour I organized for this member of Congress was the most fun I ever had, planning an event and going on it. And you could just see the smiles and excitement of the people as the train would pull in to the different train depots across Oklahoma. You could see the energy and excitement by the reporters who thought they were covering a great story. So I think as important as it is to use social media to reach people, there's nothing like an old-fashioned train trip to actually connect with people. And that's the big difference.
That is a big difference, reaching people versus connecting with people. I mean, I hope listeners will think about that because it really is a big difference. And connecting is absolutely so important. As a former candidate myself, and who got elected a number of times, connecting with people is just absolutely important. And for those who may have just tuned in, it's Bert Cohen. I'm Bert Cohen, and the show is Keeping Democracy Alive. Our guest today is author Edward Siegel, whose new book out is Whistle Stop Politics, Campaign Trains and Reporters and the Reporters Who Covered Them. And you mentioned fun. Except for the true-believing Trump worshippers, campaigns these days, it seems to me they really turn people off. They're like the antithesis of fun. Though it seems in the 2024 campaign, much of the public is simultaneously fighting mad and bored to tears. As a successful candidate myself back in the 90s and early 2000s, I was in the state senate here in New Hampshire, I advise any new candidate to have fun. It's the most important thing. The audience gets it when the candidate looks to be enjoying him or herself. It fosters more enthusiastic support. Where does the fun factor fit into your idea of a Truman-style whistle-stop campaign? And was the from your research, was the Truman whistle-stop campaign, was it fun?
It was pretty matter of fact. It was not a lot of fun, frankly. but then, of course, it didn't have to be. The train tour could last weeks at a time, and Truman had a very grueling schedule. Sometimes he would give 5, 10, 15, or 20 speeches a day from different train depots or along the route. So it could be very demanding. The speeches did not last that long because he had a schedule to meet, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then the train would go on, which is a world of difference from what a train tour can and should be today. It should be and could be, if it's planned properly, a lot of entertainment. How? Marching bands, cheerleaders, celebrity endorsers, and VIPs who would make introductory remarks for the candidates, confetti, decorations. It could be as much of a television or a movie set and part of the political theater, as you mentioned early on, which is all about creating great theater, great excitement, great fun, and incredibly memorable and newsworthy events. If it's planned and organized properly, a campaign train tour today would be a great visual, lots of fun, and generate news coverage across the country and probably around the world.
Wow, it's something that I had not considered before coming across your book, and it's but it's very interesting. Have you talked with the DNC or the Biden campaign at all about this thus far?
Well, I can't use any names, but I know people who know people, and we've had some conversations and planted the idea. So we'll see where it goes. The good news is there's plenty of time to do it right. October has traditionally been the best month leading up to the election day to conduct a train tour. And there's certainly enough time between now and then to do it right. You know, you just can't wake up one day and say, I know, I'm going to do a train tour today.
Right.
It can take weeks, months, or sometimes longer to do it right. Mm-hmm. But you need a lot of money. You need a lot of resources. You need to plan the trip right so it's hitting the states and the populations that you want to reach. But if they're working on it now or start soon, there's plenty of time to plan a successful campaign tour before Election Day.
And you've probably seen similar comparisons of where train routes are laid out in America versus those in Europe. I mean, Europe is covered all over the place. But in America, I don't know how, you know, thoroughly the trains tracks go across America. Is there enough of that? I mean, we need, you know, those seven states that the president needs to get reelected. Is there enough track for doing that?
There is today. Train travel used to be the best and sometimes the only way for candidates to connect with voters. According to my research, the first candidate to campaign by train was way back in 1836. Mm. The candidate didn't win, of course. However, there was not that many places to go by train in the 1830s. But as more train tracks were laid across the country, that really led to candidates warming up to the idea for campaigning by train. Of course, political history shows that it was actually frowned upon for presidential candidates to actively run for the White House.
I know.
They thought it was beneath their dignity to run for the office, and that the office should seek the person, not the other way around. And it wasn't until 1896 when William Jennings Bryan campaigned for the White House. Mm-hmm. He really set the standards for years to come on the best, most effective way to campaign for office. And he really broke the barriers and that taboos that a lot of people have about campaigning for office in the first place.
Yeah, he was something else, an amazing American in history who obviously never became president, but he did become Secretary of State under Woodrow Wilson. Had some differences with him then. But you've done a lot of research for this and looked back to various different candidates in the 19th and 20th century. And I wonder, let's hear some stories now about how journalists of 1948 reported on the Whistle Stop Tour. What did they like it? And then perhaps some stories, anecdotes listeners might enjoy hearing. So a couple things there.
Well, reporters really enjoyed the opportunity to be closer to the presidential candidates. And sometimes, depending upon the candidate and their staff, they actually had opportunities to socialize with them. In fact, Harry Truman often played poker with reporters on the train after a long day on the campaign trail and would frequently ask for and follow their advice on how to give better speeches. And the reporter said afterwards, the more that Truman followed their advice, the better he got in delivering his speeches. You'd never see that, of course, today of candidates asking a reporter from the New York Times or Daily Beast or CNN, how am I doing? What should I be doing different? Mm. You'd never see that. They might pick up hints from the kind of stories that reporters are doing about their speeches, but I don't think you'd ever see a candidate or the staff having a conversation with a journalist and saying, how's he doing and what should he be doing different?
Yeah, go ahead.
Campaign tours could also be hazardous for reporters, and that's something that people don't realize today. Oh. In fact, I tell the story in the book about Miriam Smith, who was a reporter for the old United Press Newswire. He was covering Harry Truman's campaign trip in 1948 on the way to Berkeley to give a speech. And as the train entered at the station, the reporter leaned over too far in an effort to see how large the crowd was. He leaned over too far and actually fell off the moving train. Members of the welcoming committee rushed to him, thought he was dead, and stuffed the reporter into a nearby phone booth so no one would see him. It turned out, though, that it was the only phone booth in the region, and the reporter actually got a beat and found his story way ahead of the other journalists.
That's amazing. I love those stories that you couldn't make up. Well, what about some other anecdotes and stories about campaigns that you discovered that make this book so entertaining and got such good reviews?
Well, there was a famous crash of a campaign train where Dewey's train actually hit a freight train that was just sitting there on the tracks. People later called it the most stupid train wreck in history, because everyone knew the train was there ahead of time, but the reporter did not slow down quickly enough to avoid having the crash. And it was newsworthy for a couple of reasons. One, a lot of reporters were injured. I write the story in the book of two AP reporters who were working on a story, and then all of a sudden the train crashes, derails, kind of tips over, and they had some minor injuries, but it didn't stop them from escaping the train, running out to see what had happened, and filing a story. Other reporters literally were left at the station. Sometimes the train would leave before it was supposed to, and reporters had no warning that their ride to the next train station was about to leave. And reporters who were left at the station, they had to scramble. Sometimes they would commandeer a car or rent a taxi and do their best to rush to the next train station. Other reporters suffered broken ankles or other injuries as they jumped off the train in order to run back to the back of the car to listen to the candidate and then rush back in time to board the train again. So there's a lot of injuries, a lot of health hazards to reporters who campaigned by train. And those are some of the forgotten stories I tell in my book.
What about some of the candidates that campaigned by train? There must be some interesting stories there as well.
Yes, a lot of candidates had health issues. I write in the book about one candidate who talked so much that he had a sore throat and people could not hear him well. So campaign supporters flew out a famous throat doctor from Hollywood, who usually took care of Hollywood stars. And the doctor examined the candidate and said, you know, you got to talk less and you have to rest your vocal cords. The candidate was not happy with the advice and said, you can go to hell. And he didn't follow the advice. Well, it turns out the injury to the candidate's vocal cords was not as bad as people thought, and he later recovered. But as I write into the book, sometimes candidates would allow others to actually impersonate them from the campaign because they were so tired or they were so worn out and they needed to rest. I tell the story in the book that the FDR, he was so tired from campaigning across the country, he asked an aide to impersonate him just so he can get some rest for a while. And he showed his aide how to impersonate him with his smile, with his famous gestures. He didn't go outside and speak from the back of the train. This impersonator sat by the window, and as the train moved slowly past crowds, he would wave, and people thought FDR was waving to him when in fact he wasn't. So I write about a lot of these impersonators and people who deceived the public into thinking that they saw a president or a presidential candidate when in fact they didn't.
So it's who would have been thinking about campaigning by train? Here we are in 2024, you know, super ultra high tech, everything's internet. But that personal touch, it's really important. And again, for those who may have just tuned in, I'm Bert Cohen, and the show is Keeping Democracy Alive. Our guest today is the author of a new book called Whistle Stop Politics, Campaign Trains and the Reporters Who Covered Them. And Edward Siegel is suggesting that this might be something really out of the box that is not being thought of right now, that might actually connect with people. And with regard to, well, other candidates, I know that, I don't know exactly what happened with Woodrow Wilson, but he was doing a train tour, and he got, I think that's kind of where he had his possible stroke or whatever it was, but he was work. It's hard work on the candidate, is it not? And what about the Woodrow Wilson episode?
Yes, he wanted to campaign by train across the country in 1919, and he wanted to do that because the Senate was not supporting the League of Nations treaty that he was advocating.
Right.
And Wilson thought it'd be a good idea to try to generate public support for the treaty, and that's why he wanted to campaign by train. But even before he left Washington on that trip, his wife, his advisors, even his doctors counseled against it. They did not think he'd be up for it. They did not think it would be a good idea for his health. But he said his health was not as important as getting that treaty passed by the Senate. And he went anyway. Of course, his advisors and wife and doctors were right.
Yes.
When he got to the, after a rigorous schedule of speeches across the country in California, he suffered some health issues, and his aides and his wife, he canceled the trip, and the train rushed back to Washington, D.C.
And he eventually, his wife became kind of acting president while he was unable to do so. Fascinating story that is. And you talk about exhaustion. I mean, I can imagine, I obviously don't know, but there were, that back in the earlier days in the 19th and 20th century, that there'd be one stop real quick after another stop and another stop. And now, of course, you know, the president would not take a coal-driven train anymore. There's some high-speed trains, which themselves, you know, I would think would be an attractive feature because people like trains and it could create a lot of jobs and reduce pollution. And I wonder about the likely schedule because people, you know, people have been worried about that are his supporters about his schedule. I mean, Joe Biden did a terrific State of the Union speech, which was really breathed a lot of new, fresh energy into the campaign. But I wonder about the possibility of staggering stops enough so that he could build up some strength and look vital and look strong as he did in the State of the Union speech. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's a big difference between the train trips in the 1940s and what candidates knew today or could do today. In the 30s and 40s, the train trips would last for days or weeks across the country.
Mm.
You never see that today. A train tour today might last just a few days or even a few hours.
Right.
And that's exactly the case of the trip I planned for the congressional candidate. It was went for about 100 miles, and it was like five or six hours. When Biden campaigned by train in Ohio and Pennsylvania, that was only for a few hours. So you'd never see a month-long or weeks-long or even days-long trip, not because it would tire the candidate, but because they just could not afford to be away from the White House or using other forms of ways of connecting people. Plus, you don't want to overdo it. Campaign trains are what I call political eye candy. It's a great way to attract the interest of the media, the public, generate enthusiasm. But like candy, it could be a sugar high and it wears off. So you just have to be very careful about how you use that campaign tactic. But I think if it's used sparingly, if you plan the right route to reach the people you need in order to win the election, it could be a very, very effective strategy today.
And to me, there's no question that eye candy is where it's about, where it is. And I've been amazed at how much free airtime the former guy, the orange one, gets. The reporters, it's just, it's incredible. And it's like they can't get enough. I don't know if it's the reporters doing that or the assignment editors or whatever, but Joe Biden doesn't get nearly as much TV time as the dramatic, the political theater of Donald Trump.
Well, the saying is that nature abhors a vacuum, and they've got to fill it with something. And that's the same is true for all forms of media. You need to fill the copy. You need to fill the airtime. But I do think that Biden is making a huge mistake by conceding so much airtime to his opponent, yeah, the orange one. And he's got to find a way to fight back and to have more visibility. Biden's using what many presidential candidates or people, incumbents in the White House, have used before. It's called the Rose Garden strategy. Right. By giving speeches, presentations, whatever, from the Rose Garden or the Oval Office of the White House, and impressing people that you are the president of the United States. Well, that strategy only goes so far. And after a while, people just start tuning out, and it becomes white noise. Right. That's why I think a campaign trip could be so effective for Biden. People would sit up, they would pay attention, and imagine the thousands of people who would show up at the train station with their cell phones at hand, taking selfies and pictures, inundating and maybe even breaking the internet with all the selfies and social media posts. There would be a tremendous multiplier effect of people showing up and posting on social media that they saw the President of the United States at our local train station. That, in addition to the traditional news coverage you would bound to get, could be another part of the tipping point and another reason why I hope he's planning a train trip before Election Day.
I certainly hope so. And I'll tell you, I've been an active observer of and participant in presidential campaigns for a lot of decades. To me, aside from the same old militaristic foreign policy as every other president, in terms of domestic issues, what I see of Joe Biden is he's doing an exceptional job. I mean, domestically, he's gotten a lot done. The message is not getting out there, though. Can you figure out why he's not connecting better? Why the messages of his many domestic successes are just not getting out? I really don't get it. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's the old saying that if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one is there to see it, did it actually make a sound? People, as much great work as Biden has done, people do, it's just not penetrating. And whether it's his staff or the DNC or his campaign, or maybe they're saying, well, we're going to wait till we get closer to the election. There used to be a strategy in politics where you did not want to peak too soon.
Right.
You did not want to get ahead of the skis and use all of your great stuff before people were paying attention. Well, we live in a 24/7 news cycle. Right. People are paying attention all the time. And you can see how that, the failure to get your story out, how that's affecting Biden in the polls. And I think these are different times, different media than decades or years past. And I think you need to think and act differently, think and act outside the box, and take full control of the message. That's another traditional part of effective campaigning. Control the message. I don't see how Biden is controlling the message.
No.
It's ironic that a former president of the United States facing 90 or whatever the number is indictments is getting more press coverage than the incumbent president of the United States. And it's a media problem. It's a strategy problem. It's a visual problem. And I think Biden and his staff have to wake up and smell the roses, seeing what's happening around them. And don't cross your fingers and hope that the other candidate is going to go away and be quiet, or that he's going to get convicted.
Right.
You got to get your message out and do it sooner rather than later, and find ways of breaking through the clutter, getting people's attention. And I think a campaign train tour would be a great antidote to that problem.
Yeah, I mean, even if the former guy gets convicted, which according to the evidence, he should be, but it doesn't seem to matter with his base. But of course, that's it doesn't. I'm not convinced that that's the majority. That his support will go outside of the 30 or so percent that he has just locked up, the true believers. But one of the people who wrote about your book, Mike McCurry, who was Bill Clinton's press secretary, wrote about your book, "Whistle Stop Trains are fun, but more importantly, they provide those who lead us with a view of the country that they can't get any other way." What about those factors of truly seeing the country in a way that they wouldn't otherwise see, and then projecting the fact that Biden is seeing the country and is getting out there? What about that as a perhaps important factor?
Well, to paraphrase Harry Truman, he said, the further you get away from train travel, the worse things are going to get. That seeing country by train was a great way for candidates and politicians to stay closer in touch with the people. And the farther you got away from train travel, the worse things could get. And there's no doubt about it. You need ways to connect. You need ways to break through the clutter. You need ways to, reach out and ensure your message is being told the way you want it. And you need ways of countering the opposition. Right. Don't act like your opposition. Do something different so then you're not confused with the opposition. Yeah. And you're standing out on your own terms with your own messages. And the other guy has not campaigned by train. Ironically, in the last election, he or his campaign put out T-shirts and other memorabilia to make it look like he had campaigned by train. But of course he didn't. He's another way to trying to fool people. So you need a real candidate using a real campaign strategy like campaign travel. And Biden would come across as much more authentic, the human touch, and another way to show how he's different than the other guy.
Yeah, I can imagine one candidate traveling by train and seeing the country and really getting what the country is about, getting a feel for the people and connecting with what's going on with the people, while the former guy has to be in court day after day, week after week. That would be an advantage that you would think he might want to take advantage of. Now, back in 1948, there was virtually no television. In fact, if I'm correct, the Kennedy-Nixon race of 1960 was the first TV campaign. TV Today brings the candidate right into the living rooms of hundreds of millions of voters. In what ways could the Whistle Stop tour actually be more effective in, the eye candy or whatever, in connecting? How could it be more effective than TV that way?
Well, it could be effective because it'd be a great way to show the story. In addition to the traditional reporters, I think you'd actually see people doing live shots and stand-ups at the trains and covering these candidates live. Depending upon the schedule of a Biden campaign train tour, you'd have advanced publicity of days and weeks ahead of the visit. That's what happened in years past, where the candidates would make it known what stations they'd be going to, when they'd arrive, how long they would speak, and often it was front page news just about the arrival of the candidate. Mm. And oftentimes towns and complete cities would shut down for the day, schools would close, businesses would shut down and shutter their doors, and people would just run and walk and get to the local train stations as they basically could. They would clog streets. They would cordon off streets and call in police for crowd control. It was quite a scene. And there are stories and photos, some of which are in my book, where hundreds and thousands of people are crowding around the train, back of the train, to see the candidate. And you just don't get that kind of excitement or interest or enthusiasm from a post on social media or an ad on television or radio. You've got to show up. And showing up in person, showing that you're a flesh and blood person, reaching out, shaking as many hands as possible. It used to be an old saying in politics, that for every person whose hand you would shake, you could count on that person to remember you and likely vote for you. And it's that handshaking index I think you need to bring back. Mm-hmm. You got to put the candidate back with the people, have them shake as many hands as possible, and create a setting that is memorable. I write in the book that decades after people saw a candidate at the local train station, they could remember what they said, they could remember how they feel, they could remember the sense of excitement decades after the event. So it's a great way to connect with people, to be memorable, and it could be the tipping point, as I said, for Biden in this year's election.
You're reminding me, when I was campaigning, I was outside a factory gate greeting the workers as they left, and I shook the hands of this woman, and she stopped for a second and said, "I like your smile. I'll vote for you." And I was thinking, wait, what about my positions on the issues? Doesn't that matter? But that's the thing. It connects with people. There's just something that, you know, it connects with people. And this connection or lack thereof, I don't know, somehow some people seem to connect with their hero, Donald Trump, you know, standing up and being, you know, a tough guy. I don't know what it is, but they take a measure of who you are. And you can't do that on TV. But coming into your town, having, you know, a big hoopla, everybody knowing when it is, that's interesting. And it's, you know, maybe an old idea and at first strike people as, what, traveling by train? But there's a lot to it. And journalism today is very different from the nearly two centuries of American politics that your book addresses. What do you think today's citizens would find interesting and fun to read about in your description of political journalism of old? Why is it useful to know, and what can we learn today from it?
Well, people often like to know what the old commentator Paul Harvey would say. We close his stories and say, now you know the rest of the story.
Right.
Taking a look behind the scenes of how reporters used to cover the whistle-stopping candidates will give people a sense of how journalism used to be conducted. It could be a very tiring experience for reporters, as just as it could be for candidates who would spend days or weeks at a time traveling by train. Sometimes it could be incredibly boring. Mm-hmm. I write in the book of one reporter covering a campaign train tour. He was so bored, he actually got on top of the railroad car, which was traveling very slowly, and he just wanted to catch some fresh breezes and see the countryside, and would shock people who were watching a train go by, and he saw this guy standing or sitting on the top of the train. So it could be incredibly boring given the schedule, but it could also, as I mentioned earlier, could be hazardous to the health of the reporters. Yeah. Were accidents or crashes or whatever. And also it was very challenging for reporters who had to jump off the train. There were three kinds of reporters I write about in the book who would cover campaign trains. One would simply stay on the train and listen to the speeches if there was a PA system and write their speeches based on what was said. The second type was the one who would immediately jump off the train when it was safe to do so, run to the back of the train, watch the candidate, scribble some notes, maybe talk to some people in the crowd, and run back to the press car before it left. The third was the reporter, kind of reporter, who simply sat in the car, waited until the candidate staff handed out the transcripts of their remarks, and would write their story based on that. Mm. But that's the kind of stories and background that people don't know today. And they see someone just standing in front of a camera, or they read the stories in the paper on social media. They have no idea about the rest of the story. And that's why I write for a full chapter in the book, what I call Meet the Press, stories, anecdotes, behind the scenes about what it was like for journalists to cover these whistle-stopping candidates across the country.
If you just tuned in, dear listener, Bert Cohen here. The show is Keeping Democracy Alive. Our guest today is Edward Siegel, who's got a new book out, Whistle Stop Politics, Campaign Trains, and the Reporters Who Covered Them. And, you know, America today is certainly not the America of the mid-20th century. Many people really long for that old, familiar, genuinely democratic republic. It's really under threat, and it's really different. A very wise old friend of mine long ago told me, he said, Bert, there's only two things that motivate people in politics, fear and reassurance. I wonder if what you're suggesting might be a welcome injection of reassurance somehow.
I think it would be. Again, it would put a human face on a candidate. People would have the opportunity to, depending upon security arrangements, of course, see, hear, touch, shake the hand of Joe Biden. And there's nothing like seeing a politician in person that can give you a better sense of the individual. You were right earlier about your experience running for office. Sometimes people don't care what you're for or against. They just want to take a measure of you.
Yes.
Do they like you? It's like the likability index. And more people might just have a better sense of seeing a candidate in person. They don't care what they're for or against. They just want to know what kind of person they are. And I think given the tribal nature of politics today, a campaign train could literally and figuratively bridge a lot of gaps in our society. It could literally and figuratively cross the bridge between tribal factions and just inject a little bit more humanity and having people get a better sense of who the candidate is, and they could cast their votes based on the character of the person and not necessarily on their policy positions.
Yes, and that's something that does motivate people. There's no question about that. We talked about, you know, who would you rather have a beer with? And that's one reason why George W. Bush won when he did. What about some risks that here we are in the 21st century and journalists might not treat a whistle-stop tour positively, although they do get bored. I know a bunch of reporters and they spend, I mean, like being in battle, a great deal of time being bored and a very short time on an actual story, an actual hit. But isn't there some risk to this that they might say, train campaigning by train, it's so old and Joe Biden is old. What about that risk factor?
No, it speaks to what I mentioned earlier, that reporters are always looking for a good story. They want looking for ways of showing the story as well as telling the story. They're looking for the largest possible audience of readers or viewers or likes on social media to their stories. Some reporters I know, they're actually measured by the number of clicks on their stories on websites or social media. Uh-huh. And I think a campaign train tour would certainly boost their ratings, boost their audiences, get more clicks. And of course, thanks to social media, people can share the stories to many more times, people who actually might have seen the story. And that's another multiplier effect that I think reporters are very mindful of. I don't think they'd be tired or apathetic about a campaign train tour. They would see it the way all of their predecessors have seen it for decades into the past, as a great story, a great way to show a story, to tell a story, and the kind of visuals and enthusiasm you just don't see these days on any other form of campaign strategies or tactics.
Yeah, for sure. And there's also the reality that we haven't really spoken about, that new high-speed trains offer the prospect of a lot of new jobs, building them, as well as getting the high-polluting, you know, automobiles off the road. I wonder if that might be something that is a positive as well, that help, you know, reinforce the message, building America, build back better. Gosh, where have I heard that before? And, you know, I wonder about whistle-stop train trips, specifically in those key battleground states. So maybe you can just reinforce why you think that would help Biden connect and sway voters, and why, you know, that's a unique way to connect in these battleground states.
Well, I think the most effective use of a train tour today would be to reach the people who are undecided or who are willing to be persuaded. You just don't want to go to the blue states where people love you already.
Right.
You want to reach out to those who could actually make an important difference in the election. And part of the success of a campaign train tour today would be how it was mapped out, how the route it would go through, and you'd really have to coordinate the train way it was never done in the past, by talking to the pollsters, talking to your staff. Where's your support? Where are the people who can be persuaded? Where are we going to get the best news coverage? You know, it wasn't until the 1920s census that it was discovered that more people were living outside of cities, living in cities and outside. We had been for a good part of our history an agricultural society. And that was one of the attractions and benefits of campaigning by train, that the candidates would go to the train depots of towns and cities. Now, of course, there's been, in many cases, a big exodus from the cities. You'd have to go to the plan a trip and coordinate with Amtrak or whatever train company you'd work with. So you're hitting the train depots in the suburbs or the exurbs. It'd be careful, probably more planning and careful consideration than any other campaign train tour in history. But then, of course, a lot will be riding on it to plan it the right way, reach it the right way, and make sure that as a campaign strategy, you're using the tactic as the best way to reach the people and connect the people to help win the election this year.
And targeting is so important. If target those swing states that are a possibility that other candidates have flown over and not paid attention to, wow, there'd be a lot of strategic thinking and tactical thinking involved in figuring this thing out. The book is called Whistle Stop Politics, Campaign Trains and the Reporters Who Covered Them. And who's the publisher on it?
Publisher is Rock Creek Media. And the book is available on Amazon or wherever you buy your books online or brick and mortar stores. There's also a Kindle edition available on Barnes and Noble and Amazon. And for more information on the book, you can visit my website at whistlestoppolitics.com. That's whistlestoppolitics.com.
Hey, thank you so much, Edward Siegel. Really appreciate it. Fascinating thoughts on catching the attention of people and connecting with people and maybe making a difference in this election that hasn't yet happened. Thank you so much for being with us on Keeping Democracy Alive.
Thanks, Bert. I really enjoyed the conversation.
If you enjoyed that discussion, don't miss a single show. Subscribe. It's all free. And if you find the information valuable, your friends probably do too. Please ask them to also subscribe. It's on Apple, Spotify, Progressive Radio Network, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and of course, the website, keepingdemocracyalive.com. Thanks very much.